Coming up, it's time for TWiT. We've got a great panel for you. Dan Patterson from CBS News, our good friend Lou Maresca from This Week in Enterprise Tech, and novelist Rob Reed, who's going to talk about synthetic biology. He predicted the pandemic way back when, last year. We're going to talk about a guy in a jetpack flying in the flight path at LAX, the U.S. court finally vindicating Edward Snowden, and a Fisher-Price baby toy that knows the Konami code. It's all coming up next on TWiT. This Week in Tech comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week at Tech, episode 787, recorded Sunday, September 6th, 2020. Dreamliner. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Forward Networks. Forward Networks reduces business risk by revolutionizing the way large networks are managed. Forward Networks' advanced software delivers a digital twin of the network, a completely accurate mathematical model in software. Get a demo at forwardnetworks.com/TWiT. And by Eero. These days, you need solid Wi-Fi in your whole house, so everyone isn't working on top of each other. Well, that's why you need Eero. Go to eero.com/TWiT and enter the code TWiT at checkout to get free overnight shipping with your order. And by Barracuda. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at barracuda.com/TWiT. And by LastPass. Let LastPass improve your employees' experience while safeguarding your business from cyber threats. LastPass is the number one password manager. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to find out how they can help you. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And we have brought in the big guns for this week. Dan Patterson is here from CBS and CNET, senior producer. Hey, Dan, how are you?
It's great to see you, Leo.
Good to see you.
I'm well.
You got a nice haircut. You actually went into Brooklyn and got an artisanal haircut.
It was a process. It was a protected process, but a process nonetheless.
Yeah,
great to see you, though.
I don't like the shaggy look, so I've been getting haircuts, too, but we have somebody come to the house, and we do it outside. So that's not going to be very tenable much longer. Actually, it's not right now.
Yeah, that was
111.
That was
degrees.
My first haircut. Was my wife took the clippers to my head, but it grew over the summertime, and we decided to test Brooklyn's infrastructure.
Flobee stock has gone through the roof, I hear. Big
sure.
times for Flobee. Also with us from our show, TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, and Microsoft, Lou Maresca. Hi, Lou MM.
Hey, Leo. Great to be here.
Good to see you. Is this your behind you? Is that your flight simulator set up back there?
It is. It is. It's my new machine, the 64-core beast that I decided to build, because if you're going to work from home, might as well work with a little style.
And I bet you built it right before NVIDIA announced their new cards.
You know, I actually bought a gap-filling card, a used
smart.
Card for only like $150.
Yes, so smart.
I'm waiting for the 3090. Yes.
And is it an Intel or is it an AMD core?
It's AMD. It's AMD.
64-core Ryzen.
Yes.
How does that feel? What is that like?
Oh, it feels so nice. You know, shutting down is just as fast as going to sleep. So I can just shut the machine down at night and come back up and hit it go. And boom, about 10 seconds later, I'm back in the Windows. So I love it.
And did you go out? I understand there's been a run on flight sticks and pedals and all of the gear that, you know, if you really want to make flight sim real. Did you go out and get all that stuff?
You know, I have an old Logitech flight stick.
Oh, that's
from
good.
Like
that'll
15
do.
Years ago. This
and,
is the flight stick from
and it still
years.
Works. By the way, I can't help but notice your beautiful headphone stand back there. Is that what that is?
Yes. Oh. I made that about 6 months ago with a little bit of plywood beautiful. And some hand strength.
Did you bend it yourself?
I did. Yeah, it took about a week with a lot of water and a lot of mineral oil, but it actually worked out.
Oh, that's so. I didn't realize Lou was a woodworker, but earlier today in the Twit chat, he was sending out pictures of the little desk he's building for his kids.
Yeah.
And then you hit your thumb with a hammer, and now he's on the show.
You're not a woodworker until you smash your fingers. No, you so, yeah, that. That's definitely
it's, yep. it's part of the coming of age process. Right. Great to have you, Lou. Also with us, it's been a long time since we've seen Mr. Rob Reed on the show, author of After On and many other great books. He's working on an Audible original right now, and it's so nice to see you, Rob.
Great to see you as well. It's good to be back on the show. It's my first time remote.
I know. Normally we'd get you to come up. You're not so far away, but, nobody's...
Pandemic.
It's not that. You'd stick to the roadway. The tar is melting.
That's true.
It's 111 degrees out. It's never... Literally, in all the years they've been keeping records, it's never been this warm in Petaluma. We are record heat up here. And I imagine you're not so far away in Marin. I would imagine it's similarly warm there. Stay inside.
Yeah, I think you've got about 20 degrees on us. I think it's in the neighborhood of the low 90s. Oh. So it's you're definitely setting records that we're not quite taunting just yet.
I can't believe it. It's just incredible. It's now dropped down a little bit. We did hit 111. So, Rob gets a little bit of credit because he did a TED Talk. When was that? Last year.
Yeah, it was April. It was at the annual conference, so it would have been April of last year.
April 2019.
A little bit more, smidgen more than a year ago, yeah.
In which you talked about pandemics.
I did.
How did you, what did you say? I haven't seen it yet. I've seen your earlier TED Talks, but what was this one about?
This one is about something called the Carlson curve, which is basically the Moore's Law curve for synthetic biology. And like Moore's Law, it is an exponential curve, which means that the things that practitioners of synthetic biology and life sciences in general can do are getting better and transforming with incredible speed. And one of the ramifications of that, that kind of eludes our intuitions, because we're not really configured to intuitively understand exponential growth because our ancestors didn't really encounter it on evolutionary timescales. One of the ramifications of that is the things that only the most brilliant and well-equipped professors can do in the most rarefied of ivory towers is pretty much inevitably coming soon to a high school lab near you, much as the things that could only be done high-end labs.
Just what you want, 16-year-olds working on new paradigms in biology.
And doing things that the entire synthetic biology industry cannot do today, that will definitely become possible in a high school lab.
When?
Within a very low, low single digit number of decades. Think about, the kinds of things that could only be done in academic labs in computing in the 1970s. And ask yourself, how long was it after that before anybody who cared to own a personal computer could do that thing, whatever it was?
Right.
And the answer was probably in most cases 15-ish years, 20 years. Think about a high-end academic computing lab in 1973. My guess is pretty much everything that was being done there could be done on a home computer by the early 90s.
Right.
And there's no reason that this curve is going to move any slower than that. And what's frightening about that is that it is possible for brilliant academics, if they wanted to, and luckily they don't, to create some really nasty pathogens. And because the admissions committee to becoming a brilliant academic usually involves many years of very stable career growth, that kind of weeds out people who might do something spectacularly bad for spectacularly bad reasons. But when that technology proliferates to the point where millions of people or even more have access to it, we can't count on absolutely everybody being perfectly stable and, not doing something really rogue with an artificial pathogen. So that was the subject of the TED Talk, and that's also the subject of this Audible original that I'm working on. It's basically an expansion of that TED Talk.
It's an interesting topic because in the early days of the internet, when we and Moore's Law was well known, and we knew that we were going to see exponential growth in tech, computer technology, many people, and I'm going to include myself, were utopianists. We said, "Oh, this is the greatest thing. You're going to, you know, eliminate gatekeepers. Everybody will have a voice." And we didn't do probably as much thinking as we should have about the potential for negative consequences, which we are starting to see today. Maybe it's time to start thinking about, if you have a Moore's Law in biology, thinking about the impact of that. And obviously some of it will be positive. I mean, I'm, again, utopianist that I am, I think, oh, that's great. Kids in high school will be curing COVID. It'll be amazing. But they may also be creating deadly pathogens at the same time. And so it's important to kind of think about the consequences. This idea, though, Rob, is not new. I remember Bill Gates, when he was still running Microsoft, saying the next big thing. You know, he used to go on these binges reading about topics, that was his summer reading list. One of them one year was exactly this, was about genetics and biology and the kind of the future biotech revolution. So that was probably 25, 30 years ago. We've known this is coming. So it's your sense that it's actually getting closer, that it actually is starting.
It's getting a lot closer. Yeah, it's like when you double something on a regular basis, you know, it's a very quiet process for
a
long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, then all of a sudden it becomes highly noticeable. It's kind of like that, you know, the puzzle that a lot of, you know, parents teach their kids. Would you rather have $1 million or a penny that doubles every day for a month?
Right.
And if you pick the penny that doubles every day for a month, even around the 22nd or the 23rd of the month, if you look at the sum of money, it's looking like you made the wrong choice. And you know, then all of a sudden it's the 29th of the month. And so I think with SynBio, it's maybe not quite the 29th of the month, but it's definitely getting well into the 20s. And we need to start thinking about what happens.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm very curious as you're talking. I wonder if there are instances in history, or at least modern history, maybe anthropologists would know better, but have cultures decided to eliminate or elect to not use, or for lack of a better term, delete technologies before they reach that exponential point? Meaning, have they identified potential dangers and said, this is the dangers outweigh the benefits for our society. Let's get rid of this technology.
Nothing that I can think of. And in this particular case, I agree on the idealist front. I'm with Leo, and that I think that the promise of SynBio is spectacular. And a tech ban is essentially an impossibility. I mean, you think about what we've done with nuclear proliferation. That's been hard enough. You know, nuclear weapons since the non-proliferation agreement was signed, whenever it was signed, maybe in the 70s or earlier, you know, India, Pakistan have acquired nukes. Iran is right on the cusp. And that is easy to monitor because it requires an enormous industrial complex to make nuclear weapons, whereas biology can be practiced very much on the sly, you know, in tiny, tiny little, you know, laboratories that can be, you know, barely larger than a conference room. And so if there was some kind of a tech ban, not only would we be foreclosing an unbelievably wealthy aspect of our future, or promising aspect of our future, but, you know, how could we count on China and Russia to honor the ban? And how could they count on us? And how could any of us trust North Korea? You know, if you implement a SynBio ban, you're almost by definition giving a rival a SynBio monopoly. So I think we kind of need to lean into this and say SynBio is upon us. It has incredible promise. There are some extraordinary dangers. Let's be as clear-eyed as possible about the dangers before they become clear and present, and start, you know, today taking countermeasures against the kinds of things that we can very plainly imagine bad guys doing in 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And that's what I advocate for. And the good news is, in this particular equation, like if you think of somebody wanting to make a doomsday bug, well, who would do that? Well, I don't know. The Vegas shooter, if he had the capability to create a doomsday bug.
Might have preferred that, yeah.
Might well have done that. But the bar to being a good guy versus a bad guy when the act is create doomsday bug that imperils humanity is incredibly low. You know, Al Capone would be on our side on this one, right?
There is a history, and to answer a little bit to answer your question, Dan, of us, at least in warfare, using things like the Geneva Convention to eschew things that would be so destructive, nuclear anti-proliferation or the use of biological warfare, that we all agree, let's not do that.
That's at least limit access.
At least
I don't mean a ban, but let's limit access.
But I have to say that's the only example I can think of. And almost always the counterexample is almost always the case where, hey, if we can invent it, let's do it. And we haven't been very good at controlling this stuff at all. Even nuclear anti-proliferation has, you know, is kind of a backfilling and in the long run probably will fail. So I don't want to be dystopian right off the bat. it's a good warning. A really good warning, Rob. I'll look forward to hearing that Audible original. Actually, it reminds me a little bit about, and we were talking, everybody on this panel, myself included, we're kind of cocooning right now, right? We've all found places to go. We've all kind of battened down the hatches. A great piece by Doug Rushkoff in Medium, The Privileged Have Entered Their Escape Pods. This is kind of related, Rob, because it said technology gave us the dream of a cocooned future, and now we're living it. If you're privileged enough not to have to work as an essential worker in a meatpacking plant or a grocery store or a healthcare facility, if you can batten down the hatches, continue to make money, get yourself fed, get your family taken care of, we're all kind of gone back to the womb. He tells a really good story. Actually, this is the best part of the article. He tells a story about Timothy Leary. He says, I remember back around 1990 when Tim Leary, the proponent of LSD, of course, first read the Media Lab book by Stuart Brand about the new technology center that MIT had created in its architecture department. Leary read it all in one day. Around sunset, just as he was finishing, he threw it across the living room in disgust. Look at the index, he said. All of the names, less than 3% of all the names, less than 3% are women. That'll tell you something. He said, my problem with Media Lab, and maybe this is a problem with technology in general, is they want to recreate the womb. As Leary, who was a trained psychologist, saw it, the boys building our digital future were developing technology to simulate the ideal woman, the one their mothers could never be. Unlike their human mothers, a predictive algorithm could anticipate their every need in advance and deliver it directly, removing every trace of friction and longing. These guys would be able to float in virtual bubbles, what the Media Lab called artificial ecology, and never have to face the messy, harsh reality demanded of people living in a real world with, oh, let's say, women and people of color or people whose views differ. What do you think? Are we, has COVID forced us into our escape pods?
Sounds very Tim Leary.
Wildly prescient.
Yeah, 1990, Leary said that. And, you know, he did pinpoint a big problem with this, which is the lack of diversity in Silicon Valley.
And we have been having very similar conversations, at least parallel conversations, at least going back the last half decade. I wish that we had been prescient enough to talk about this for the last 20 or 30 years. But I mean, we have been talking about, especially with sexism in Silicon Valley, how many of these companies are built by men to solve problems that men who are of upper middle class have. And I think that we really don't have to look much further than people like Kara Swisher and her Emily Chang is another great example to find people who have really discussed this in pretty great detail.
Well, it's easy if you're a woman or a person of color to say, look, it's all a bunch of white guys doing all this stuff. It's easy to say, look, the problem is getting the white guys to say, come on in. Why don't you try it? And I think with all the diversity programs, with all the diversity programs we've seen in all these companies, I don't see a lot of results.
Yeah.
Takes time.
Takes time, says the guy who works for Microsoft.
Yeah, takes time.
Yeah, you know.
I've been part of a lot of these programs. I mean, I did outreach. I've gone to places and recruited in places we've never recruited before. We try to
normalize how we post things and make sure they're more inclusive. And we still don't get the amount of applicants that we expect. Yeah. And we can't go out and find the applicants that we expect.
That's because it's a systemic problem, because you're operating at the top of the pile, but you've got to start putting people in at the bottom. You've got to get girls in grade school, junior high school, to be embraced in math and science programs, right? Because they got to work their way up through it, so that when you're at the top of the pile, you have some choice, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you definitely have to get them started sooner. Like, a lot of high school programs we're starting to see, we do a lot of high school programs at Microsoft, and we're starting to see this a lot, where we get more people enthusiastic about it. And absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how we started with this dystopian. it's funny. These days, it's so easy on all our shows to just kind of make it a downer, because it's very easy to find plenty of stories about how technology's gone wrong and things are going wrong. It's a lot harder to find things to get excited about. I tell you one thing I am excited about, and actually in the light of this, it all seems really trivial and stupid, but you've already got it, Lou. You've had it for a while, and that's my Duo phone. I'm sorry, it's not a phone. My Microsoft Duo folding doohickey. Can you still not talk about it?
No, I mean, we could talk about it. I think the idea here is I can tell you how I feel about it. I think it's...
But you can't turn it on and show me yet.
Can't turn it on and show me. But it's definitely an expensive device, but it's definitely feels to me like a device that people are going to really enjoy. Like, in fact, the camera is actually better than you think.
So there's two questions unanswered, because reviewers who have the phone until September 10th can't even turn it on and show you. And they can't post pictures, which is the thing. So the two questions I have are battery life and picture quality. We can't tell from the specs if it's going to be a decent camera. And I don't expect it to be Pixel 4 quality or iPhone 11 quality.
No.
But it doesn't have to be if it's decent quality. And frankly, I guess that really the real question is the computational ability in the device. Because it's not the sensor anymore. It's how smart the software is about what it's captured, right?
That's right.
You can't respond to that, I know, but...
Well, what I can tell you is, there are actually a lot of people at Microsoft who've been self-hosting for a while that post pictures all the time.
Oh, good.
I saw one on LinkedIn recently from one of our CVPs, so you can go check them out for sure. But I can tell you, Microsoft focuses on the unification of software services and hardware. And I think what you'll find is that this device takes it to that level, is that and I'm not trying to throw out an advertisement here. I have, an iPhone and iPod devices all over
the iPad devices. No, in fact, Lou, one of the things I love about you is you're not a shill for Microsoft, and it's great to have somebody on the inside. You work on the Azure team, right?
I work on the Office team.
Okay.
No, I work on the Excel team, actually. I'm encapsulated within the Excel team for Office platform, but yeah.
But you are always dead honest, and otherwise we wouldn't have you hosting Twiat. We wouldn't have you on our shows all the time. You're always really good about that. So it's nice to have somebody who knows this stuff who can talk about it. So, good. Well, I'll know on Friday. I can't wait.
Yes.
I'll be showing pictures next week. I think... For me, the reason I was willing to spend, I bought $1,500 because I got the extra storage, so much on that phone, is because I think I'm dying for a new form factor. And it was really a choice between that and the Z Fold. We now have seen the price and availability for Samsung's folding phone. They had an event this week. And I'm still not convinced that a folding screen is going to be anything but janky. So that's, that's my, either any of you guys have a fold you can talk about? No. All right.
No. I mean, come on. How long can that last?
$2,000 phone. And
how stress.
Long? Yeah. And it's going to have a crease down the middle and.
Yeah.
all right. So nobody I know has ordered one. Anybody in the chat room? Are you anybody? Anybody? You know what I think is interesting about the Duo that kind of got underplayed is that Microsoft, for the first time ever, is swapped positions. It is now an OEM of somebody else's operating system. For years, Microsoft made a living making operating systems for other manufacturers to put on their computers. For the first time ever, Microsoft is making a computer to run Android, somebody else's operating system. That's just weird.
Who knows, you know, that you might see more of that.
The future? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the future. I don't know. You're being very cagey.
We've been running Linux and Azure for a long time now.
Well,
SQL Server is going to be installed on Azure. I mean, on Linux pretty soon. Like, I mean, it is actually. So I think it's a new generation. It's a new world we live in here.
It's a different world. Linux went from being a cancer to having a Microsoft kernel on Windows 10, a Microsoft Linux kernel on Windows 10. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll actually get to some actual news in just a bit. Got a great panel, though. When I have a panel like you guys, I often don't want to just do news. I like doing what we were doing with you, Rob, talking about, you know, futures and things like when a high school kid's going to make a pathogen that's going to kill us all. That's exciting. That's great stuff.
That's fun stuff.
It's captivating.
God. Now, I have to say, I am going to point out that it has happened in the past many times that we've been bullish on technologies that haven't taken off. We've talked about this exponential curve with AI. It hasn't taken off. What, you know, frankly, these voice assistants are at plateaued for years.
For consumers. I mean, AI in the enterprise is fantastic.
Is it? Or are they just falling for it?
I think, fantastic is the wrong hyperbolic language to use, and I'm sure that others know the enterprise much better, but I think that it is something that has led to some considerable cost savings.
But it hasn't created the Terminator.
It hasn't created Westworld.
Or even HAL 9000. So, I don't know. You know, business intelligence, okay, fine. AI is one example. There are others in technology where, you know, we never did get flying cars. Autonomous self-driving vehicles are making strides, but I would have thought we'd be at the hockey stick curve by now. We're not there. I think some of these problems are more difficult. CRISPR is a good example, right, Rob? We really thought CRISPR would end up being an amazing gene splicing capability, cutting and pasting of genes. But it turns out we don't know enough about genes to know when we're cutting what looks like junk DNA, and it actually is vital for the survival of the organism. And so CRISPR is maybe not living up to its potential. Is that, that's my understanding. Is that wrong?
You know, I would say that so much really skilled lab time was being lost to the sort of splicing that CRISPR makes possible, the cutting and splicing and pasting that CRISPR makes so much easier, that we didn't know enough about genes before CRISPR.
Yeah.
What CRISPR's advent is allowing us to do is to learn those lessons so much faster.
Good point.
The limits of our knowledge, you know, because it was just unbelievably skilled people in labs were lavishing time on processes that really were ultimately just sort of rote, but they took a great deal of skill to do. And CRISPR has really accelerated the learning that we can do. And again, like I said, finding out like, oh my God, junk DNA matters more than we thought, because we've done all these splicing exercises that we never would have done before.
Right.
Because it would have taken too much time to do something that would have seemed trivial. So I think it really makes a big difference.
We may not have created a cut and paste for genes, but we've learned a lot from that. For instance, there's some evidence that using CRISPR eliminates a cell's cancer resistance, probably because
it can, depending on what you've cut.
Right.
Yeah, it can.
Right. Whoops.
but as for the Terminator, Leo, I interviewed a bunch of astrophysicists and astronomers for my podcast, and they have a famous saying in astronomy, which is, it's never aliens until it's aliens.
Yes.
And that's meant to caution people when they find a weird phenomenon out in the sky to not default to aliens. But it also reminds people that in all likelihood, given this enormity of outer space, there are aliens out there. So I would translate that to the Terminator. With AI, it's never the Terminator until it's the Terminator.
Or in the case of LAX, it's never a guy in a jetpack until
it's a guy in a jetpack.
This was the story earlier this week.
We just saw the guy passed by us at jetpack. JetBlue 23, he used caution. Person in a jetpack reported 300 yards south of the LA final at about 3,000 feet.
So we still don't know if there really was somebody in a jetpack flying 3,000 feet in the flight path at LAX. Seems like a bad idea, but more than two pilots reported visual sightings of it. Maybe it was just a drone with a costume.
A drone with a dummy.
A dummy, maybe. I mean, honestly, I'm starting to think it was that, because it would be very foolhardy to fly. First of all, we don't know of any jetpacks that can go 3,000 feet and stay in the air for any length of time, right?
Yeah, you have to just pop up and pop right back down like a bottle rocket. Yeah. But they can get to 3,000 feet, but like only like round trip, like very fast.
So, well, maybe you never know. But a number of pilots reported it. People who know pilots say it's pretty likely that if they say we saw a guy passing us in a jetpack at 3,000 feet on the flight path, that they did see that.
And one of them said only in LA.
One of the air traffic controllers said, or maybe it was a pilot, only in LA. I think it was a pilot. Only in LA.
A pilot, yeah.
Maybe it was David Blaine in a weather balloon, Karsten says. Maybe that's what it was. Our show today, we got a brand new sponsor. I'm really pleased to welcome Forward Networks. I was on the phone with them earlier this week to get a demo, and I am so impressed. Four Stanford PhD students developed Forward Networks 7 years ago because they knew network operators and they saw the pain there's so much mystery when you're looking at your network and your cloud. You know something's gone wrong. You know you're not getting data from this point to this point, but you're looking at this puffy little cloud and you don't know what the hell's going on in there. So these guys were math experts, software experts. They applied principles of modern software development to the network. And what their software does now is it builds, you're going to love this, Lou, a mathematical model in software of a physical network. It actually delivers, wow, and you can see it on screen, a digital twin of the network. This is not Nmap. This is Nmap on steroids. This is, it can go out. It can see everything that's on your network. You start with what you think your network is, because everybody who's running a big network has a map of what they think it's on their network. Rarely is it accurate. Rarely is it up to date. All you have to do is ask the guys at NASA. Remember when somebody brought in a Raspberry Pi and connected it to the network at NASA, and it was a huge problem. You just don't always know. But now with Forward Networks, you know exactly what's going on. You can verify your network's configured correctly. No more mistakes with your BGP rules. That it's in compliance with policies, it's behaving like you thought it would, like you intended it would. You can predict. This is actually the most valuable. You can say, look, we're thinking of doing this, and you can apply it to the mathematical model to predict the impact of that proposed chain across every possible traffic path. Wouldn't you love to have that? If there's something wrong in your network, you can go see what it is. If you're about to do something in the network, you can go see what the result will be. Forward Networks dashboard provides key network insights with visualizations you can actually look at. They're consumable and exportable. It automatically creates an always accurate network diagram with full details about the topology. You can search network behavior, configuration, and state network-wide. With an intuitive and powerful tool, you can perform end-to-end path analyses across the network, on-prem and cloud, doesn't matter. And cloud, even all the way directly down to the customer, proactively identify potential connectivity and security policy violations. You can verify your network's configured and behaving as you intended, on-prem, cloud, virtual overlay networks. You could set, check, and customize policies for your entire network. One of the cool features they have, and you got to try this out. By the way, it's used by people all over the world. Verizon uses this. It's Bank of America. Goldman Sachs is a perfect example. These are software guys. These are quants. These are nerds. They thought, we know exactly what our network's doing, until they didn't. they got Forward Networks on there, they were blown away to see what's actually going on in real time. PayPal, they were having an issue with their network. They thought about starting over. This is the thing. I mean, people like Goldman Sachs, these guys say, we can build it ourselves. We don't need it. So you build it. You do your own software. You do your own thing until it doesn't work. And then you go, oy. Forward Networks. PayPal turned to Forward Networks instead of building their own system. Found out all they needed was software that could find the trouble spots. That saved them time. It saved them money. And by the way, if you're a network operator and you now have this map, you're never going to want to live without it again. Get faster resolution of network trouble tickets, 50% faster, 90% faster fixes related to audit processes, 33% reduction in aborted network updates due to identified errors. Imagine you could search your network for what's causing problems. They just got a Series C last October. Goldman Sachs led it, which tells you something about how happy they were about the results. Andreessen Horowitz, Mark Andreessen loves this, Threshold DFJ, $65 million in funding. This is something that you're going to say, I wish I'd known about this sooner. Get network automation and verification for your intent-based network right now with Forward Networks. You know what you should do? Get a demo. They've got a great demo at the website, forwardnetworks.com/twit. Please use that URL so they know you saw it here. Forwardnetworks.com/twit. Maybe you haven't heard about them before. They're starting to become better and better known. We're doing our best to help the world know about it. This is such a great tool. Forwardnetworks.com/twit. Thank you for your support, Forward. And thank you for supporting us by using that special URL. Facebook says we're not going to allow political ads on Facebook the week of the election. Okay. Pinterest says no. I didn't even know you could buy political ads on Pinterest. The thing that was most interesting to me is reading about the Trump campaign. You may remember they stopped television advertising a couple of weeks ago. It turns out almost all of that money has been redirected to YouTube. Trump in 2016 demonstrated a mastery, I think, of Facebook. There's some argument about that. Politico's story today saying Trump deploys YouTube as his secret weapon in 2020. Now, I've seen people say, oh, you know, Trump didn't use Facebook perfectly in 2016. Facebook helped him do that. There's some debate about whether that's true. There were Facebook employees embedded at the Trump campaign, right?
In both campaigns.
In both campaigns.
If this was not a secret, you could talk to them. And remember, this
Brad Parscale is the guy who gets like the evil genius award, right, for how he used Facebook.
Well, kind of, but he just got fired or demoted.
Well, that's because he did some other he didn't understand TikTok.
And he didn't understand data. He oversold it. And that's exactly right. I mean, TikTok is partly responsible, but he also is not the evil genius that he look. This is my beat, and I've been covering data in politics.
That's why I'm bringing it up. I got the expert here.
Yeah, I'll try not to go too far down the rabbit hole.
But, I'm fascinated.
But it's pretty well known. It's not even a secret or an open secret that Parscale certainly oversold his capabilities in 2016. And he was certainly rubbing the president the wrong way even before the campaign kicked off, which was officially the day he was inaugurated or the day after and unofficially at the beginning of this year. And look, he did miss TikTok and he did miss big data operations that were kind of aligned against him. And he paid a price for that. That's not the only reason he was demoted. His relationship with Hope Hicks is another reason. But data is not – we have a story coming out on CNET about this very soon. But data is not the be-all, end-all. You go to war with the data you have. And if you have bad data and you're targeting wrong on Facebook, you're going to mess up. If you're targeting wrong on YouTube, you might be able to you might be effective. But the wrong data will yield the wrong results.
YouTube doesn't report spending so we don't know exactly with television advertising, but not with YouTube. But according to Politico, the Trump reelection campaign is pouring money and staff time into Google's video platform. $65 million on YouTube and Google, $30 million since July. The Biden campaign has spent only $33 million on YouTube and Google the entire campaign. Is this going to – it's really interesting. So first of all, let me ask you, is my premise wrong? In 2016, how important, Dan, was Facebook to the election?
Boy, I don't know.
We don't know. We just can't tell. Between Cambridge Analytica, clever use of ad buys.
I have a really good editor at the network who always, I mean, he drives me nuts because he does what an editor is supposed to do, which is when I come with tech and I come with my own data and I say, look, Lex, this proves it. He says, no, it doesn't prove anything. Like, you can't prove that Facebook was able to, air quotes, activate, which is the language they used. They want us to believe that they can send signals to their audience and, air quotes, activate them at the right moment. And there just is no proof of that.
It's generally agreed, I think, that the Trump base, if you can get them to turn out the vote, is very, very powerful. And so that's what you mean by activating, right? Is getting those base voters to go to the polls.
Yeah, they can. It's called GOTV. They can GOTV, get out the vote. They say when they want to. And traditional GOTV, it's like you have to keep. It's kind of the campaign Biden has been running, which is you have to keep your base kind of motivated and, you know, make sure that they do get out to the polls, make sure they have all the tools that they need to get to the polls. But what the Trump campaign has been selling, at least until now, is that we can do this on a dime. We can activate people when we want them to. And they've been selling this capability, not just to politics, but to all sorts of third parties who would like very much, including advertisers, would like that capability.
Trump's campaign, according to Politico, spent $10 million total on YouTube in 2016. They've already spent much, three times that amount. Trump officials say YouTube has been more effective at times than Facebook at not just, at mobilization, getting out the vote, but also fundraising and then persuasion. In 2020, YouTube has become an increasingly influential force, and they're better able to use it. One of the things they're doing is, of course, they have a Trump channel, a campaign channel, but they also have ad buys, negative ads paired with live stream series like, quote, Black Voices for Trump, Real Talk Online, exclamation mark, end quote, and, quote, The Right View, end quote. The campaign uploads, I'm reading from Politico, and then tests hundreds of short videos of the president speaking while also posting news clips about things like the jobs report and the recent Serbia-Kosovo deal. It is, I think it's the case 4 years later that more and more of us watch YouTube and get, it was the case in 2016, people got their news from Facebook. I think YouTube is starting to become more and more important in that regard. Yes?
Yep. Yeah, you think about it. I mean, think about it just from a platform perspective. I mean, platforms like Pinterest, they have like only 350 million monthly active users, and their demographic is very focused. But then you look at Facebook, it's very similar. Is you might have in the billions of 2.5 billion plus users a month, but it's also focused on a specific demographic. But
is YouTube... Doesn't everybody use Facebook?
Well, I mean, the younger generation is starting to step away from it.
Yeah,
So I think YouTube is where the demographic is across the spectrum. And so you have 2.5 or plus billion users a month on YouTube watching all different types of things. And sometimes you get ads from things that you're not even interested in or that are being, that are upselled to you. And you might be a younger generation. Like, kids get Minecraft videos and they'll get Trump ads. So, I mean, like, you know, wow. I mean... It's one of those things that I think they chose the right platform here.
Wow. It's funny because I don't see YouTube videos because I have a YouTube premium account. Doesn't everybody? I guess not. I don't see ads on YouTube, so I'm not aware of it. That's a problem, isn't it? I mean, you can't buy your way out of ads on Facebook.
Right.
You can on YouTube.
That would be an interesting product for Facebook to launch. I wonder if their average. I'd buy it too, just to see how it operated. And I wonder what the monthly revenue per Facebook user is. Like, there's got to be a break even point. Although maybe the value of their higher demographic people who would be more likely to afford such a service is high enough that it would price them out. I mean, who knows? But that's an intriguing notion.
Each user, according to Arcnea.com, each user of Facebook is worth 150. Well, based on their market cap, is worth
market cap. Yeah, yeah, but revenue is a question.
Or revenue. I've read somewhere. Let's see. Somebody's saying $6 per quarter, $24 a year. I read somewhere $41 a year. It's probably in that ballpark. Mm. Not a huge amount, but multiply that times $2.5 billion, it starts to add up.
But the real challenge is money.
Facebook aren't necessarily the ads or the ads targeting. It's trust. And can you trust that the platform isn't using your – I mean, even if I were to buy my way out of ads on Facebook, can you trust that they're not – using my day, right, my data in ways that I might find objectionable?
Well, I don't even have a Facebook, Instagram, or WhatsApp account, but I know that they're still gathering information about me. Actually, I use a Firefox browser, which fences off. They actually have a really kind of nice privacy fence. Fences off. They call it the Facebook container. And when I go to a page, I'll see it light up saying, "Yeah, Facebook has a tracker on this page, which we've blocked."
You've been part of the graph.
They emailed us great at that too.
Once you're part of the graph, you're in. Like, you have connections in the graph that talk about you, that link to you, that have previously known you. Once they already have that, they already have your information.
That's right.
It's too late.
Because my wife's on Facebook. So whatever, right, you know, they know. Oh, Lisa's on Facebook. So we could figure everything we know about her is sort of true about Leah. Yeah, you can't really get away from it. I'm actually kind of curious, and I've been thinking a lot about this. We had some texts come out over the past few days to Ethernet wire all of our house because Lisa said, "I hate Wi-Fi. You have to stop this." She's got to work at home. She's Zooming all day. And so she's got nice little wall thing at her desk with four Ethernet ports on it. We're going to do the whole thing. And in the process, the guy said, "You know, you really should upgrade your Comcast internet. It'll go up to a gig." I said, "Really? Okay. What about bandwidth caps?" He said, "You can buy your way out of that too." I said, "Oh, I'll do it." I called him up and I was going to cancel TV. I thought, well, if I have a gigabit and I have ports everywhere, what do I need TV for? But they gave me such a good deal. I'm such an idiot.
You're one of those guys.
They gave me such a good deal. They said, "Look, we could take your bill. We could cut $50 off of it, give you gigabit with no bandwidth cap and every cable channel and phone service for $50 less."
And then give you the backbone, the 5G backup too.
And then he said, "Yeah." And then he said under his breath, "For 1 year."
So I put it goes up to $1,000.
It goes up a lot because what I didn't realize is if you say, "Well, I don't use the phone. I don't need phone service." Okay, but that's going to raise the cost $50. It costs you more not to have a triple play bundle. These guys are so sneaky. But more and more I'm thinking, okay, now I can't do it now for a year. But in September 2021, I think I'm just going to have internet and go over the top. And I really wonder how much longer cable companies will be able to operate as pay TV companies. How much longer? It can't be more than a few years before everything's over the top, right?
Oh, OTT is the future.
Yeah.
It is everything.
I bet you, you're a young guy. I bet you don't have a cable subscription.
No, but I have Fios, which is a gig up and down. And I just bought the Verizon Wi-Fi 6 router, which is
nice,
tremendous. I put all of my IoT devices on kind of a side network so it doesn't limit or impede my primary network. And I mean, I'm quite a distance. I mean, I'm a long way away from my router and it's not perfect, but it's not terrible either.
So and Netflix, YouTube, Peacock, HBO Max, you don't need and if you want locals, I guess you get YouTube TV or Sling TV. You don't really need a cable subscription. And who the hell has home phones? I've had this. I didn't even know it. I looked and said, "Oh, I have phone service from Xfinity. I've had that for years. I've never hooked up a phone." So it must be people my age and older that are keeping cable television alive, right?
Absolutely. It'll be a demographic shift. It'll be like Reader's Digest in the 90s or something.
It's the Reader's Digest. It is.
Yeah. They had an issue in the 90s where they realized that their demographic was slowly leaving the stage. And there was really just sort of a timer on the business. And cable will probably end up being kind of like that.
Well, they're not stupid. They know that. That's why my internet access is going up and up and up. And it's cheaper, so much cheaper if I get the triple play for the first year that you're going to get it. So I kept TV and telephone, even though I don't need it because I have over the top everything.
Everything we do at CBS News is OTT. We do not have a cable, at least the network. We do not
actually
have a
CBS has an excellent app.
We are CBSNews.com/live. I'm not log rolling. If you want OTT and you want good news,
yeah,
we are 100% in with OTT because it works for our audience. It works for our news gathering, for the network. It's the way we break news without being on cable.
Cousin of Ya in our chat room says cable TV is the rotary phone of the 21st century.
The phone in general.
Yeah, I don't even need a phone. Who needs a phone? So this is a challenge, though, to get back to our original conversation for political campaigns. I mean, it's a challenge for pollsters, right? Pollsters don't include cell phones for the most part, which means they're missing, like, everybody
in the country.
Yeah.
Oh, they use all kinds of different data. I mean, you can talk to one of the most well-known and widely used polling companies is called Morning Consult, and they do bespoke polling for, I mean, they're not.
So they'll do cell phones now.
Well, they won't tell you what they do.
I bet they don't, because who answers an unknown number on their cell phone anymore?
Never.
They use data.
Data. Oh, I'm sorry. By the way, you missed the air quotes if you're listening. What is air quote data?
They won't tell us. They won't talk about their tactics.
Secret sauce.
Well, we'll find out. I think pollsters didn't do such a good job in 2016. We'll find out how well they do in 2020. At some point, it's going to be a problem because at least our audience and most people, I think, under 25 are aware of these privacy issues. They don't have home phones. They don't watch cable TV. I feel like the world is changing rapidly and campaigns are going to have to struggle to advertise to and get to especially younger voters. And polling, forget it. Right?
Yeah. You have different data streams, though. I mean, like they were saying, you have, you know, who knows if credit card companies are selling their data about demographics to pollsters or what you're buying.
They do know. And they are.
Of course they are. Well, okay. Yeah. So the first rule is assume anybody who can collect data is selling it because there's no limitation on that. So everybody who's got data about you is selling it. But how can that help people know who I'm going to vote for? Is it so obvious from my credit card purchases?
It could be. I mean, it really depends on.
I should buy a MAGA hat just to screw with them.
Well, if you want a really good example, and I mean, they're a pure tech company. There's a company called L2 Political that they're right out in the open. Do a Google image search for L2 Political, and you can see how precise their maps give you. You can just buy them. Everybody uses L2. And you would use this for, again, it's called GeoTV, but if you want to send, you know, the people who knock on your doors or do call you, I have a reporter access to L2. You can log in and see you. I don't mean like a representation of you. I can look at you. I can use their maps. It's a Bing map, and I can zoom right into your block, your neighborhood, and I can see precisely how or what you care about. They use data from a source called Haystack, which came from the Obama campaigns. But again, it's not partisan. It's just a data source. On the right-hand side of that image there, you can see how you're able to filter down.
Democratic, nonpartisan, Republican, American Independent, Libertarian, Other, Green, Peace and Freedom, Unknown, Reform, Natural Law, Voter has changed parties. Changed party from R to NP, from NP to R, from D to NP, from NP to D. Female, male, unknown, marital status, military, veteran, voter's name suffix, voting. History,
and it goes into controversial issues like your stance on medical marijuana or legal weed. It goes into how you likely feel about abortion. again, this is not a secret. I mean, you can call L2 and talk to them. They'll tell you what they do. On that map that you pulled up, you can zoom right in and see the voter. You click on the voter's name, you expand their role, and you see how much you probably make, where you live, your address. I mean, it's a perfect doxing tool. You can scroll down and see how many elections you voted in. Where did you register to vote? Oh, no, I'm not.
Well, all of that's public.
On the individual.
Yeah, but all of that's public, right?
It's not public. It's a purchase.
Oh, it's not.
Well, your voter file is public information, or it is easily accessed through your Secretary of State's office. Each state is kind of different, but it is. Look, one way people get doxed is because the information on your voter file is public information.
Yeah, it's
so
your home address.
You can access somebody's voter file, then you have a really terrifying amount of information about that person.
And that is public record that you could go to the Secretary of State and then there would be some way of requesting that information?
Yeah, in almost every state. I'm not trying to take this into politics, but just to show the capabilities of the tools that are available right now. So you would take L2 and you would give it to like your local grassroots organizer or whatever, and they would then carve up territory. So I used to live in South Dakota, and they would say, well, there's only 7,000 people who live in the town of Sturgis. But you know what? I think that there are some persuadable voters there. So I'm going to find those people who might be okay with legal weed. They might be okay with abortion. And I'm going to maybe try to convince them to vote Democratic this year. Now, you wouldn't do that in South Dakota because South Dakota is always going to go red. But you would do that in, say, Texas, North Carolina, Georgia, some of these swing states. These are, when they say battlegrounds, the good data shows that you can do battle on the ground over voters' hearts and minds.
Wow. So this is particularly used for politics, but it's the same information marketers use and have access to.
This is what I was talking about with Brad Parscale and what he was maybe doing and is doing. Parscale.com will show you exactly how he's trying to leverage his capabilities. If I can get a political campaign to do this, I can certainly sell the same capabilities to an advertiser.
Yeah. Wow. And of course, speaking from my perspective, it's one of the reasons advertisers are less and less likely to buy ads on podcasts, because we can't give them any of that information. And it's so much more efficient for them just to buy a Facebook or Google.
Spotify,
which can give them that information. This is one of the reasons Spotify has a $500 million war chest to buy podcasts and take them exclusive. They reportedly gave Joe Rogan $100 million to make his podcast not a YouTube show, not an RSS feed, but a Spotify exclusive. And you can see why there's $100 million in it, because everybody who listens to Joe Rogan, all the tens of millions of people who listen to Joe Rogan every month, we'll have to do it through Spotify. And of course, Spotify is an app. It will know geolocation. It will know all sorts of demographic information. So let's take a break and let's see how this applies to TikTok, because we thought somebody would buy TikTok this week. Didn't happen. I think I know maybe why it didn't happen, but we can talk more about that. This is a good panel. Good to have you here, Dan Patterson. This is his beat. Big data and how it's used in a variety of ways. He's a senior producer at CNET and CBS News. Great to have you, Dan, from our Twiet show this week in Enterprise Tech. The lovely and talented Lou Maresca. Always a pleasure to have you on. You have an excellent choice in T-shirt, Lou. It looks like
t-shirts.
Looks like somebody put a Twit logo against your chest and then splattered you with paint.
Yeah, I really
Perfect.
Love this one.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's one of my favorites. I think Anthony Nielsen designed that. I don't know. Do you know offhand, John, who designed that? Anthony's our in-house graphics guru, so I'm going to guess it's Anthony. But if it's somebody else, let me know so I can give him credit. And a longtime friend, I haven't seen him in ages, Rob Reed. His book After On was amazing. Actually, two great books in a row. Are you going to stop writing fiction, or is there a novel in your future too?
I think there's a novel in my near future.
Good.
Yeah, I think there's another season of the podcast coming up, and I think there's a novel coming up. Just right now, I'm in the throes of this Audible original, And when that's the decks are cleared of that, I'm going to figure out exactly what the sequence of the next couple things are going to be.
Yeah, the After On podcast was great, but you're on hiatus during COVID, right? That's what
Well, no, I could bring that thing back. I'm thinking about bringing it back in conjunction with the release of the audiobook, because there a lot of the scientists I've interviewed about 20 scientists for the Audible book, and a lot of those relationships that I've developed through researching that book. Would be great interviewees for the podcast. So I think there's pretty good odds I'll bring it back in conjunction with the release of the audiobook.
And you were prescient, not just with the cyber, with the pandemic, but After On was very prescient with this whole Facebook targeting and knowing everything. I remember the scene in the bar where it knew what drink you were going to have and offered it to you ahead of time. You've been writing about this for a long time. In a way, writing fiction gives you a chance to talk about these things in a way that's it's not an argument. It's just what if, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like Black Mirror does a great job of it on
TV, right?
Where you take the very near future and you just tweak one variable, and that to me is a more interesting exercise than setting something in the deep future when you know essentially everything about society is going to be completely transformed. So you're almost creating a fantasy world. Because, you know, if you're writing science fiction that really takes technology into account, you can't really write something that's 300 years in the future and have the society look very similar to our own.
Yeah.
I mean, how similar do we look to the society of the 1600s? Like, we don't.
Well, the funny thing, though, is the future's catching up with your science fiction.
I know. Oh, After On was, I thought I was being all speculative when I was talking about a social network having gained consciousness and run amok.
Right.
And there was almost nothing in that book that Facebook hasn't done. By the time it came out, because there's always a 12-month lag with printed books, which is maddening. By the time that book came out, it was virtually not science fiction anymore, aside from the AI attaining consciousness, which, by the way, is not a spoiler because you see that coming from the first page.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good, though.
Thank you.
It's such a great story. So that's why I'm glad to hear you. The fiction, you haven't abandoned fiction, but they mesh, because you really are, as any great novelist, you are writing about current events in a fictional framework, and it actually works really well.
Yeah, I'm actually listening to 1984. The last time I read it had to be 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to it right now.
Same thing. Yeah.
It's fabulous. I love Audible. Yeah. That was one of the great delights off of Audible. And he just inverted the last 2 years of two numbers in the year that he was writing, 1948, to call it 1984. And it was very, very much a commentary, although it was a science fiction novel. It was set in the future and had technologies that were at the time still impossible, two-way telescreens.
Right.
But he was very much commentating on his present day and the rise of, you know, totalitarian communism and so forth. And it's really fascinating to go back to that one.
No kidding. I also have been listening to Brave New World because same thing, right?
Yeah.
A little bit less dystopian, but actually more dystopian if you really read between the lines.
I would certainly rather live in the world of Brave New World, which is
completely
hedonistic.
Give me some Soma. Yeah,
some of those great parties that they have. I'd rather live in that world given a choice, but it's a dystopia of vapidity. Like, everybody is so vapid in that world.
Exactly.
That it would drive anybody on this panel crazy to live there. Exactly. But it would be better than being tortured by the thought police.
We're going to take a little break. Better than being tortured by the thought police. I think that's the bottom line for this show. That's what we're going for. Our show today brought to you by Eero. I tell you what, it's still on the radio show almost every day. I get somebody calling me complaining about their Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi was never designed for how we're using it, with three kids on Zoom, looking up recipes. I'm looking up recipes in the kitchen. Somebody's watching YouTube videos. And that's just in our neck of the woods. And then we got the neighbors, their Wi-Fi. It's just a mess. That's why Eero is such a godsend. It's what we use at home. And I have to say, Eero solves your Wi-Fi issues. Fast, reliable Wi-Fi inside and out. If you've got rooms with bad to no Wi-Fi or dropouts on the back deck, or as we call it back east, the patio, Eero makes every square foot of your house usable by eliminating poor coverage and dead spots. You'll have a strong signal wherever you need it. And then what's nice is you can add beacons to fill in the gaps. You get the Eero base station. And with everybody using the internet, Eero automatically adjusts with quality of service to the right places at the right times. It's fast. It's easy to set it up. You just plug it into your modem and you're good to go. And I love the Eero app. I've been using it a lot lately. As I said, as we go wired, I'm still going to have a lot of Wi-Fi, because even if you have a wired setup, and of course some of our workstations at home will be, I've got a ton of Internet of Things devices, Google Homes and Echoes. I've got laptops. I've got phones. You still need a great Wi-Fi, and that's Eero. We ask a lot of our Wi-Fi these days. Eero can help yours do more. Go to Eero, E-E-R-O, Eero.com/twit. If you use the code TWIT at checkout, you'll get free next-day shipping with your order. Do not suffer another day more than you have to. Eero.com/twit. And don't forget to use the offer code TWIT at checkout to get that free next day shipping. I tell you, Eero is such a boon. It saved our lives. It will save yours too. Eero.com/twit. The offer code is TWIT. Eero.com/twit. I think you're going to like it. Don't forget the offer code TWIT for free overnight shipping. All right, let's see here. What did I say we were going to talk about? I forgot already.
TikTok.
Yes. Nobody's bought it yet. Do you think so? The Chinese last week announced that they were going to add the intellectual property, the AI that TikTok uses, to their export restrictions, in effect hinting that whoever buys TikTok ain't going to get the secret sauce. Do you think that's what's holding it up?
Oh, yeah.
Why would you buy it?
I mean, it's, well, you might buy it without the secret sauce, but then you'd pay a lot less money, right, and you'd get the sauceless TikTok, which may not be worth a whole lot.
Yeah.
But you'd hopefully pay commensurately. Or you have to go on bended knee to the Chinese government to seek an export like grant. But that would completely mess with the timeline that Trump's put on this. I think he has a September 20th deadline.
15th.
When he wants this. 15th. 15th. Okay, yeah. Or even worse, from the standpoint of the administration, you could license the algorithms from ByteDance. But if you license the algorithms from ByteDance, then you haven't achieved what the administration is seeking to achieve, which is getting China out of TikTok.
In fact, you're making it worse.
So it's an interesting chess move by the Chinese government. And it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. I don't know if anybody else shares this with me, but does anybody else find it bizarre that Oracle, of all companies, is buying TikTok? Like, since when are they interested in reaching tweens and teens? I mean, that would be like the post office buying MTV. I just don't understand.
It might tell you that the AI is valuable. It might tell you that there's a lot more to TikTok than just dancing people on videos, that there is actually some secret sauce that Oracle could use. They certainly have AI efforts.
And while that's my assumption for Walmart too, that they need some sort of machine learning or AI that would help them be a little more competitive.
Walmart is in the deal. And by the way, the last rumor was that Walmart is now teamed up with Microsoft.
Yep.
Originally it was Walmart SoftBank, and that was kind of a non-starter because there's no technology company involved. But Walmart makes sense for e-commerce too, right?
Sure.
TikTok is potentially a great e-commerce platform. Instagram, I bought way too much crap through Instagram. That's the real reason I don't have an Instagram account. I was kept buying stuff in the middle of the night, like weird underwear.
Walmart makes sense because both Walmart and TikTok reach inordinately high numbers of consumers. So that I get.
Right.
But I guess the AI dimension must be the only explanation for Oracle, because
also,
they don't have a media business.
Larry Ellison's a buddy of the president, and it could, I mean, it's still money. And among these guys, I think money talks more than friendship, but it could well be that the president said, look, Larry, let's work something out here. I don't know. That's one of the things that makes it so hard in this day and age, because there's so much uncertainty. You feel like this is why QAnon is so big. You just feel like there's machinery going on in the background that we just know nothing about.
Oh, that's also my beat.
You could tease it out, though.
Is that your beat, Dan? The machinery in the background nobody knows anything about?
No, but QAnon people know a lot about, and it's nothing.
Well, they make up stuff. But I understand why people become conspiracy theorists. It some of it comes from this sense. Well, we were talking. It was really interesting. I can't remember who I was talking to. They said this. It's two things. Jeff Jarvis was referring to a book. I just can't remember the name of the book. It's two things. One, a mistrust of authority, clearly, mm-hmm. right? But two, trauma. Trauma from being misled. Trauma from not understanding. Trauma from being beat down. And so you're looking for anything that will make you feel like you understand what's really going on, because it isn't. Yep. You don't. And I completely understand that. I really do. I can see how seductive something like QAnon is, even as bizarre and patently nonsensical as it is, right? So, okay, TikTok. So will it be sold? Will it not be sold? What's the prognosis?
I'll bet it gets sold.
Do you think?
Yeah, but it gets sold. Everybody on all sides of the transaction ultimately want that to happen.
It's going to happen soon. You got a couple of weeks. What does Satya tell you, Lou? Are you going to be on TikTok team
all the time? You know, my point of view is this. Like, think about it. LinkedIn was a purchase a while back because they know that's where all the professionals are over the age of 25 or whatever. And so obviously this is a way for them to get into that. I mean, 60% of all U.S. users are between 16 and 24 of TikTok. So like, there you go. Like, I guarantee Microsoft is interested because of that, and that's where they're going to push hard on it. And then it kind of completes their portfolio, if you think about it.
They bought LinkedIn.
That's right.
Same reason?
Absolutely. They bought Minecraft.
Minecraft was a good purchase. And I think Microsoft has done has been a great steward of Minecraft. That has gotten better since Microsoft bought it. Yes?
Although they've been eclipsed by Roblox, I believe, in
Have
users.
They?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Roblox is big on TikTok with the kids.
Yeah.
I know that because Michael, who's become a big part of this show, our 17-year-olds, went to grade school with a young girl who he had a crush on at the time, who now is like a major TikTok star. She's the queen of Roblox. So I know that. So there is some sort of nexus. I never got into Roblox. Should I? Is that something an adult would be interested in?
I think it's a pretty young demographic.
Sorry?
Damn. There are creep. I mean, it is used by predators.
Oh, really?
For sure.
Oh, God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because that's where kids are.
And it's an online service. As opposed to Minecraft, you really couldn't be a predator in Minecraft. You'd be an 8-bit predator. But
Roblox
is the same thing. These are avatars. Network.
Your avatar could be creepy. Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. These are social networks. And I mean, where there are social networks, there are people, creeps. There are creeps. Yeah. Right?
Isn't that nice? Isn't that special? We're trying to figure out what to do. I John Prosser, who is a pretty prolific and fairly accurate Apple tipster on Twitter, he's 77% accurate, according to people who keep track of this thing. Prosser says that there will be an Apple announcement on Tuesday.
Mm.
Yes. Not clear if the announcement will be a live stream or merely a press release. His last tweet 9 hours ago, Apple press release is currently scheduled for Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern. Though I should note, it's not locked in until the press has been briefed day of. I'll tweet early that morning to update you if it changes. We know that there are new iPads, at least one new iPad, an iPad Air, but I think more than one, in the offing, as well as Apple Watches in the offing. But a press release, this would normally be the day, Tuesday, that Apple would announce the new iPhones. I think we're delayed on those because of COVID. Apple said in its last quarterly results that they would be delayed probably as much as a month, kind of more like the iPhone X timeframe. Prosser, last August, so it's a really old tweet, but he did update it September 1st, said the Apple Watch and iPad via press release this week, iPhone 12 event next month, the week of October 12th. The devices will be available for pre-order that day, but not shipping till October 19th. And then the iPhone 12 Pro device, the high-end iPhone with 5G, not till November. So that's the timeline. We'll, you know what? Whether that's accurate or made up, we'll find out probably Tuesday. I was hoping there'd be an event. I told the team, let's be here early and get ready, and maybe there'll be an event. But maybe not. Maybe it'll just be a press release. I guess none of you care at all. You want to talk about TikTok some more? Because that's the choice, guys. I'm sorry.
I'd be excited for an Apple Glass announcement, but I don't think that's coming until a couple years from now.
Next year or the year after. Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool?
I just
don't
want another device to come out, so I have to pay for more devices.
Oh, join my pain. I hate this time of year. Fortunately, I can now kind of palm this. I still have to buy it, but I at least I don't have to. I can have Jason Howell do the Note 20 and the S20. And I don't know if we'll do the Fold. I decided to take the Duo, but then there's going to be new iPhones to buy. Maybe I'll make Micah use those. I'll palm it off on the other guys. Do you feel obligated to buy all this stuff? You don't have to buy this stuff, Lou, or do you feel like you should?
You know, I don't feel obligated, but I do like to buy the latest tech and run our software on it only because...
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean...
Can you get the boss to buy it? I mean, do you have to lay out your own money?
Most of the time, no. Most of the time, I don't. But, like, you know, most of the time I do only because I want to be able to use my own apps and view my own software on it.
Exactly. So. That's why I try to, if I can afford to, buy it, because I don't think you have a real experience with a two-week review that you don't really... invest.
No, you really can't.
I'm going to invest in the Duo. It's going to be my we'll see. My primary
carry. You should get the
pen? No, should I?
You should get the pen with it?
Look how big that is. That's bigger than the Duo. Carrier.
You don't get it with the Duo, but this is by far the most superior pen I've ever
Which
used.
One? That's the one that comes with the X.
Yes. Well, it doesn't come... Right.
It hides inside.
But the X doesn't come with this cool Surface little charging, X. Magnetic charging thing.
Oh. Can you get that from Microsoft?
Yeah. So you get that from Microsoft.
I have a Lenovo sitting in front of me that comes with a pen. Will that pen work with the Go? It works with Windows 10.
That's a good question. I've not tried that.
I'll find out. Yeah. I don't want to carry something this big along with this tiny little thin thing.
Yeah.
Now... this is actually important for you because you work on the Office team. I have to say, the Touch First Office on the iPad might be the best version of Office out there. It's really nice.
Yeah. It's way better than Google Docs on the...
Way better. Yeah, Google Docs is not good on the on iOS. And I presume... Watch this, kids. I presume Office would work pretty nicely on a Duo.
Oh, very good. Oh, very good. Yeah, there's been builds for a while of Office working on those devices, and I can tell you the experience is awesome. You know, it's funny. I don't normally say Outlook experience is awesome.
No, I hate Outlook.
Sorry, Outlook team. I think that it really is awesome on a device like that.
Because you have the list of emails on the left screen, you have the email on the right screen, or vice versa. That looks pretty. I saw Panos demonstrating that. It looks pretty nice. But I'm also really curious how many apps Microsoft has optimized for the two-screen experience, how screen aware it will be, how it will know if it's open all the way or if it's flipped around, what will it look like when I scroll between two screens. All of that is really going to come down to what Microsoft has done to Android. I know that Android has some dual-screen capabilities built in, but I don't think it's so aware that it would know, for instance, what the configuration of the Duo is, right?
Right. No, they definitely had to do a bunch of low-level things to be able to support the, you know, the 360-degree view, you know, and being able to do the various things. And some of those features that you're talking about where you can actually do something over here, where this something over here does the same thing or you scroll, is a big feature. Like, it's one of those things, like kiosk-type features that they want. So.
Yeah. If there's no point making a two-screen device if you're not two-screen aware and use it intelligently. And I'm very intrigued by all of that. I like that idea. So we'll see. We'll have more to talk about next week. Google is in the crosshairs from the Department of Justice. And apparently, Bill Barr is rushing things along. In the next couple of he's rushing. Russian things along. That's that's bad.
Sorry.
You had to do it, didn't you? Apparently, according to the New York Times, the Justice Department plans to file antitrust charges against Google in the coming weeks. The AG is said to have set a deadline over the objections of DOJ career lawyers who say they need more time to build the case. Why? What's the political payoff to going after Google now? Dan, you have a thought on that?
No idea.
Does it to look... See, this is the trouble right now with any antitrust movement against any tech company. We're all reliant on tech companies right now more than ever. And in fact, if the president cares about the stock market, which he apparently does a lot, that's more than ever dependent on the fortunes of the big five. Those are the ones, the stock, Microsoft, congratulations, Lou. I hope you have a lot of stock. Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Google, those stocks are powering the stock market. The other stocks, not so much.
Well, what they're investigating Google for is, I think, the same thing that they paid a $2.6 billion fine for in Europe.
Right.
So if that's the case and those are the approximate dimensions of the consequences, I don't know how many days of earnings equate to $2.6 billion, but it really shouldn't lop that much off of Google's market cap. In terms as for why Barr is rushing it, you know, maybe he feels that he's on a short clock now and he wants to make sure that he gets his licks in before there's an administration change.
Interesting.
That's just a guess because that surprised me as well.
The Times says a former telecom industry executive who argued in an antitrust matter before the Supreme Court, Mr. Barr, they're talking about Barr. Barr has shown a deep interest in the Google investigation. He's requested regular briefing on the department's case, taking thick binders of information about it on trips and vacations and returning it with ideas and notes. Maybe you're right, Rob. Maybe he feels like it's his legacy. Mm-hmm. He wants to get this investigation off the ground before he leaves.
Or get it past the point of no return. I think there's also a feeling amongst some Republicans that the tech companies are bastions of liberal thinking and liberal practices.
Well, that's what I wonder, punishment.
Yeah.
If it's punishment.
Yeah,
right?
It could be. There could be an element of vindictiveness there. And whatever it is, it certainly seems that he wants this thing to get going. And if he has 3 months, if there is an administration change, and obviously that's not yet known, but if he has 3 months to get the thing ginned up, it's much, much harder for a subsequent administration to say, oh, never mind,
right,
than if you only had 3 weeks.
And remember, the FTC was looking into Google and decided to drop the case quite famously
right.
A couple of years ago. They felt like there wasn't enough. Currently, the 40 lawyers, according to the Times, who are working on the Google antitrust investigation, they say, the Times says, most of the 40-odd lawyers who have been working on the investigation opposed the deadline to wrap it up by the end of September, according to three of the people. Some said they wouldn't sign the complaint, and several of them left the case this summer. So he's getting some pushback from the DOJ career attorneys. Some argued this summer in a memo that ran hundreds of pages that they could bring a strong case but needed more time. So maybe the DOJ does want to do this. This is kind of what happened to the FTC. They dragged their heels, and eventually dropped the case. Meanwhile, Amazon's furious over JEDI, the Pentagon contract, which Microsoft won. Pentagon reaffirmed this week the decision to keep Microsoft. Amazon says, why we will continue to protest this politically corrupted contract award. It's Amazon's position that the president doesn't like Jeff Bezos because he owns the Washington Post and put his thumb on the scale and gave it to Microsoft. Amazon's point is we have a more sophisticated Amazon Web Services has more of what the military needs. We're the clear leader in cloud computing. And this is a quote from the press release. And by any objective measure, AWS has superior technology. There was some surprise when Microsoft won the JEDI contract. This is a $10 billion contract, 10 years, $1 billion a year, to provide cloud services for the Department of Defense. And most people, I think, thought AWS was a shoo-in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not privileged to any information here, but I can definitely tell you that companies like Microsoft, the Oracles, the Google of the world that had their bids in were willing to offer a significant amount of discounts and additional things to the government in order to buy to get this contract than AWS was. And so, you know, I'm not surprised that they went with number two versus number one.
Just on price.
Yes, exactly. Like, I mean, again, I don't have any knowledge here, but I can definitely tell you that that's one of the biggest reasons. And to say that they have better technology is just kind of ridiculous if you think about it. I mean,
yeah, I have to think
do they really have better technology.
Some parity. Amazon's been doing it for longer. AWS is definitely the leader in this field. Amazon, in the press release, said it's important to point out that the Department of Defense cited price, as you said, Lou, as a major factor in the previous decision. But this time, during the reevaluation process, AWS offered a lower cost by several tens of millions of dollars. The DOD's decision to intentionally ignore the clear cost benefits offered by AWS reinforces the fact that this corrective action, this reevaluation, was never meant to be fair. They're hopping mad. They held back on calling it corrupt initially, I think. They're not holding back anymore.
Yeah, increasingly, the entrepreneurs and investors that I talk to about cloud computing, I've been hearing more and more and more about Microsoft and how they've done an incredible job here. And I think part of it, I mean, this is, again, just secondhand from a diversity of sources. They just understand the enterprise in ways that Amazon doesn't. Amazon understands the American retail buyer better than any company in the world. But who understands the enterprise better than Microsoft? And ultimately, cloud computing is an enterprise product. And it may just be sort of customer mentality, customer orientation that carried the day, or it could have been a political vendetta. Who knows? But I definitely have been hearing a lot more about Microsoft's cloud offering over the last 6 months than ever before.
I got to say, though, we have heard reporting that President Trump ordered the former Secretary of Defense, Mad Dog Mattis, to, quote, screw Amazon. according to the Amazon press release, blatantly interfered in an active procurement, directed his subordinate to conduct an unorthodox review prior to a contract award announcement, and then stonewalled an investigation into his own political interference. Amazon really hopping mad.
Yeah.
Hopping mad. They say, we strongly disagree with the Department of Defense flawed evaluation and believe it's critical for our country that the government and its elected leaders administer procurements objectively. I think that's true. And in a manner that is free from political influence. And I guess that's the only debate is who was technically the right. What was the right choice for the Pentagon? Or does it even matter? Maybe there's such a little difference between the two. The question we continue to ask ourselves is whether the president of the United States should be allowed to use the budget of the Department of Defense to pursue his own political and personal ends. Well, if Jeff Bezos and President Trump ever hope to make up, kiss and make up, that's all over. I think that's all over. Anybody going to buy the Halo? Speaking of Amazon.
I was fascinated. I asked
for an invite. If I could get an invite, I'll buy it. It is interesting, isn't it?
The subscription is interesting.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. It's how much is it? Is it hardware is $65. It'll eventually be $100. The monthly subscription after the first 6 months, it's only $4 a month. Although I can't think of any fitness band that requires you to pay monthly, right?
Yeah, right.
what the Halo will do, and the thing I'm going to have the most fun with, it uses AI to judge you.
Pretty much.
Why wouldn't I wear a band that uses AI to judge me? I mean, come on. you get a Halo app. It has some activity tracker. There's no screen on it. It's just a Velcro wristband with a little thing inside, or an accelerometer, temperature sensor, heart rate monitor. But it also has, and this is why I bought it, two built-in microphones to measure how you speak. According to Amazon, how you speak. Am I being a sucker? Would I be a sucker? Am I just falling into this? Jeff Bezos really just wants to put a bug on my wrist. Is that really what's?
I thought that sounded really speculative. The notion that your tone of voice could be so well understood by this device that it would be able to assess your wellness based on your tone of voice, that doesn't sound like something that most medical professionals would buy into.
I can't. And wait. Here, I can't.
I mean, it sounds like a really interesting big data project for an academic lab, but you would need to do. To train the AI, you would really need to train them on the individual. And what does the individual's voice sound like when they're sick and they're well? And they don't know that about you.
That's AI.
That struck me as goofy. That and
I don't know. AI is.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, Rob. Oh, your AI is so good. This is how you implement it? This is what.
You sound cranky today. Did you get enough sleep?
Well, they'll know if you got enough sleep.
They'll know. According to Amazon, you speak is a useful indicator of your well-being, both emotionally and physically. So it will monitor your tone to determine if you're feeling positive enough to get through your day. I just think it'll be funny. Every day I'll come in here and I'll just check my tone. Each morning you'll get a breakdown of your tonal patterns with tips on how to sound warmer.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like wellness to me. That sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
You know, with my wristband telling me, hey, Rob, you can sound more friendly even if you're not feeling that way. The other thing you might have noticed is this is Amazon's deal. We will give you a fifth mover wristband. There's lots of products that have been out there that are very mature. But we'll give you a sort of a last of the party wristband. All you need to do in return is pay us a monthly subscription price, allow us to bug your wrist, and you need to send us naked pictures of yourself. Because the other thing they said is it says to get your body fat percentage, they want you to take full body selfie with your smartphone camera. Now, I can't imagine that that's wearing a polar explorer suit, right? So it sounds like it's saying send us naked selfies and put a bug on your wrist. And what could possibly go wrong with that?
I have a theory now. Amazon is going to get more and more outrageous in the things it asks, because eventually what will happen is they'll go, oh, yeah, that was way too intrusive. So you can wear clothes during your naked selfie or something. They'll back it down a little bit and people will go, see, that's not so bad.
We already did that.
But I don't know how they can tell your body fat percentage. I mean, first of all, from a selfie, sounds reasonably speculative to begin with.
Yeah.
But if you're clad in, you know, loose-fitting clothes, there's no way they can tell your body fat percentage.
I can't wait to get this thing because I don't care. The Amazon, by the way, I've been informed by the chat room, yes, Fitbit charges $8 a month. So there's a Fitbit Plus. I didn't know that either, not having had a Fitbit since it came. I mean, I got the original Fitbits. I lost quite a few in the laundry, but I didn't know you subscribed. Tone is powered by, this is Amazon, powered by advanced machine learning. You know, if they just added blockchain to this, it'd be perfect. Advanced machine learning-based speech processing technologies. The Halo Band and Halo app use voice detection algorithms to pick up speech, remove background noise, and optimize battery life. I don't know why they threw that in. What? Our AI analyzes qualities of the customer's voice, pitch, intensity, tempo, and rhythm, to predict how others would perceive and describe the customer's tone of voice, which creates a summary you can see. I cannot wait until my band tells me you sound a little cranky this morning. I cannot wait. You set up a personal voice profile within the Amazon Halo app. You can turn it off. But once you do that, creating a voice profile is super easy, says Amazon. You just read a few quotes. In this case, some of our favorites from classic books. This trains Tone to only analyze your voice and not those around you. Once you've opted in by creating your voice profile, Tone will run passively and intermittently in the background. So you don't have to think about it. Please don't think about it. Throughout the day, it will take short samples of your speech and analyze the acoustic characteristics that represent how you sound to the people you interact with. I bet you if I do my Scottish accent a lot, it'll think I'm more cranky. You sound really angry. Yeah, I'm angry. I'm Scottish. Of course I'm angry. It's bloody cold. This gives you a simple way to reflect on your interaction and communication throughout the day. See, I should have this. As you continue to use...
I'm angry all the time. I yell at my kids too much.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. In addition to the default mode, you can also bookmark important Bookmark important conversations by pressing...
So you're recording your...
The Amazon Halo Band. This allows you to get continuous tone analysis for up to 30 minutes. So how did I sound when I was talking to you, John? When I was yelling at you. How did I sound? This allows you to get... I don't know if I want this. This helps you practice for a presentation or a big toast.
And again, what does that have to do with wellness? Like, it sounds like they're selling you on this will track your health. But then all of a sudden, they're talking about all these ways to make you sound more chipper when you're talking to your boss. I don't know if I want that kind of coaching every day.
Well, I'm sure you'll be happy to hear, Rob Reed. The way you communicate is incredibly personal. That's why we designed Tone with your privacy in mind.
Wasn't there a Bloomberg investigation that showed that the Alexa, they had people transcribing to Alexa conversations?
Why anybody would trust Amazon at this point? Any kind of a company says, we've designed this with your privacy in mind. Yeah.
Send us naked pictures.
Yeah, send us naked pictures. If you choose to turn on the feature, your tone speech samples are processed locally on the phone and deleted automatically after processing. Never sent to the cloud. Nobody ever hears them. And you have full control of your voice data, including the ability to delete tone results in your entire voice profile from the app. I don't know. What could possibly go wrong? I think this is going to be fun. I can't wait. I would be nice if it had a little electroshock capability.
Like the equivalent of kicking you under the table when you say something wrong.
Yeah. Basically, it's a wife on your wrist. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. Let's take a little break. Actually, what I'd like to do right now, John, do we have a... I thought it'd be kind of fun to run this little educational video about the week gone by. John? Mr. Rene Ritchie, he's got the silver button, boys and girls.
The real impressive award isn't like the plaque. It's when you can willfully spread coronavirus disinformation and they won't block your channel or demonetize.
That's when you know.
You've really succeeded on YouTube.
Really made it.
Previously on Twit. Hands on Android.
Two different phones at two different ends of the price spectrum. I have the Pixel 4a and the Samsung Galaxy Note 20 Ultra, and I take them on a photo walk to see how they compare.
Tech News Weekly.
We have a hands-on with the new Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 2.
The biggest difference to me is the fact that the hinge can now open and hold its position at basically any angle. And that lets you do some really unique things with this phone where you can sort of prop it up like a laptop against a table.
Security Now.
368,000 plus internet users visited this history detection demo website, which effectively sucked the browsing history out of their web browser and were uniquely identified by their histories in 97% of cases. In other words, where we steer our browsers is surprisingly unique.
Twit, download in place.
I love that. After Steve Gibson told me about that, I foolishly deleted my browser history and cookies on this Firefox, not knowing that it would sync with all the Firefoxes on all the devices I had. I had to log in 20 times to everything. It was like, oh, I got to log in here too? And, of course, I use a YubiKey, so everything's super secure. It's been a nightmare. Do not delete your cookies. It's a bad idea. Our show today brought to you by Barracuda. This is actually a good idea. Barracuda is a provider, as I think anybody in enterprise knows, of the state-of-the-art, the best cloud-enabled enterprise-grade security solutions. Hardware or software that protects your email, your networks, your data, your applications. And this is a really timely tool, the Barracuda Total Email Protection, because it turns out that 91% of all cyber attacks, almost all of them, start in an email. That's spear phishing, that's ransomware, But it could be worse. It could be account takeover, conversation hijacking. Suddenly, you have a lot of employees working from home. They're kind of outside the protection of the company network. They're getting all the email they've ever gotten, tons of emails every day. At least some of them are going to be malicious. One click on the wrong email could cost your whole company money, could cost you customers, could cost you your reputation. You've got to protect your email, especially now while employees are working from home. Barracuda has seen a big spike in the number of coronavirus-related spear phishing attacks, 667% since the end of February. Of course, they impersonate the World Health Organization or the boss. They utilize domain spoofing, so they say, come to the WHO.gov or something like that, and they say, come here, you'll get information that'll help you stay safe. But it's a phishing scam. They're sneaky. And the thing is, they're constantly changing the way they attack. That's why you need Barracuda Total Email Protection. It uses AI-based protection that is constantly adapting to the new forms of attack. It protects you against spear phishing, account takeover, business email compromise. That can be devastating. The conversation hijacking, that's what happened in Norsk Hydro. Remember that last year? One of the biggest aluminum producers in the world, factories all over the world. They were shut down for a couple of weeks, $60 million loss. And it all started with one email from an Italian customer, legit, with a legit attachment that was sent to a Norsk Hydro employee who was expecting the email, expected the attachment, except that in between the Italian emailer and the company recipient, malware was injected. The original attachment was replaced and then sent on. And that was all it took to bring all of Norsk Hydro down. It cost them $60 million. Barracuda Total Email Protection. It's an all-in-one email security, backup, and archiving solution. You get, besides the scanning, you get an automated incident response. So when you see an attack, you can quickly and efficiently address it. Speed is really vital, as you know. The faster you respond, the less damage you're going to suffer. They even have security awareness training. So your employees can be trained. They're the first line of defense. They can be trained into what to look for, what not to click on. Uncover the threats hiding in your inbox right now with a free scan. Look, here's the deal. Right now, if you go to barracuda.com/twit, you can get a free, secure email threat scan of your Office 365 account. Now, I know a lot of you are going to say, I don't want to know. I don't want to see what's in there. Yes, you do. Trust me. Go right now to barracuda.com/twit. You can just do it quietly and see what you find. I think the answer will surprise you, and it will really encourage you to do the right thing. Protect yourself with Barracuda. Barracuda.com/twit. Barracuda is your journey secured. Thank you, Barracuda, for supporting the show. And thank you for supporting us by using that special address, barracuda.com/twit. I thought it was interesting they were showing on the All About Android show the Z Fold opening and then staying in position like a little laptop. And actually, the Duo does that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got a great hinge for that.
So I thought you could pass this along to Satya next time you see him in the coffee shop or whatever. It's like a little Smurf computer, so I thought they could call it the Microsoft Smurfus. Don't you think?
I like it.
Yeah, just tell Satya. I won't. No charges.
I'll pass it along.
It's my gift.
Panos would be the one, though.
Satya Panos. Yeah, tell Panos. Yeah. I was surprised. How long ago was it Edward Snowden kind of took his life in his hands, revealing what the NSA was up to and the NSA surveillance? A court, the U.S. Court of Appeals, has now ruled that the mass surveillance of Americans' telephone records, which we learned about thanks to Edward Snowden 7 years ago, was illegal, and that intelligence leaders who defended the program lied. Edward Snowden released this statement. I never imagined I would live to see our courts condemn the NSA's activities as unlawful And in the same ruling, credit me for exposing them, yet that day has arrived. The court said there is no evidence of it saving any lives or preventing any terrorist attacks. They said that the claims that the surveillance program had played a crucial role in fighting domestic terrorism were inconsistent with the contents of the classified records, that the program had violated the FISA Act, but the ruling doesn't do anything. It will not affect the convictions in 2013 that they claim were based on that information gathering. The ACLU said today's ruling is a victory for our privacy rights. So it's what we all knew. The NSA's bulk collection of American phone records was unconstitutional, but no harm, no foul. We'll just move along. Meanwhile, in a more recent court ruling, you know, this, I guess part of the FISA Act is there is a regular yearly court review of how information is collected and whether it's lawful and all of that. We didn't learn about this when it came out, but in December, after the review, a court ruling said that the FBI and others, let me read the statement. In the ruling from December, which we just learned about, Judge Boasberg, who is the chief judge of the FISA court, approved the new annual rules, but scolded the FBI over many instances in which its analysts had violated the previous rules, including requirements that searches of the repository have a foreign intelligence or criminal purpose. The judge wrote, "It must be noted that there still appear to be widespread violations of the querying standard by the FBI. For instance, in August of last year, the FBI made a query for information using the identifiers of 16,000 people, even though only seven of them had ties to an investigation. The FBI said the entire search met the standard of being reasonably likely to retrieve foreign intelligence information or evidence of a crime, but the judge said that position was unsupportable and said all but the seven were broad, suspicionless queries, fishing expeditions. So even though the judge said, "I'm unhappy, you did it wrong, it's illegal," he said, "Okay, but go ahead." So a couple of court rulings that accomplish nothing but at least vindicate Edward Snowden and those of us who said that there's no excuse for warrantless surveillance. And you know, even the oversight isn't doing much to stop it.
I talked to a source of mine about this a year last July, and she said, just casually, she said, "You know, that stuff was really useful, but we just use Palantir now."
Yeah, great. We don't need it anymore.
Whataboutism?
Yeah,
this is bad.
No, but we don't need it anymore because thanks to Peter Thiel and Alex Karp, we got all that information. All right. What else? I got an urgent email last week from Cory Doctorow, which I didn't respond to fast enough. The EFF was trying to get the California Assembly to hear a bill that would expand broadband to the people of California. The assembly, they hoped before adjourning, would hear SB 1130, but they adjourned. They didn't want to hear it. They refused, in fact, to hear it. And the EFF is a little upset. Senator Lena Gonzalez, who had created the bill and really built a coalition for it, even had the support of the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, the California Senate. She said in a press release on the bill, "During this crisis, children," and this is true, I've seen pictures of this, "are sitting outside Taco Bell so they can access the internet to do their homework. But the assembly chose to kill SB 1130, the only viable solution in the state legislature, to help close the digital divide and provide reliable broadband infrastructure for California students, parents, educators, and first responders. The assembly put in poison pill amendments that the big telecom industries wanted in there. There were hundreds of phone calls and letters of support. There was an EFF petition. EFF co-sponsored the bill with Common Sense Media. So they're regrouping. And Corey asked me to help by signing the petition, but it didn't work. So even though the Senate passed the bill 30-9 in June, the Assembly just turned its back on it. The idea was to stabilize and expand California's internet infrastructure, spend over $500 million on broadband infrastructure as quickly as possible, enable local governments to finance with bonds $1 billion for long-term low-interest rates to support school districts, build broadband networks at a minimum of 100 megabits per second download with an emphasis on scalability so they wouldn't have to finance new construction later, support low-income neighborhoods that lacked broadband entirely, expand eligibility for state support to secure every rural Californian internet access. So, Corey talked a little bit about this last week. I just thought I'd give you an update. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get that approved in the assembly. Do you any of you use cable card? This is kind of a special, narrow bit, but I want to mention it because I use cable card. FCC used to require cable companies to provide you with a PCMCIA card, credit card size device that you could put in your TiVo, primarily as TiVos, but other devices to make them cable boxes. So you didn't have to use the crappy cable boxes the cable company offered. Cable companies hated it. They would hide it. I remember when I went to get cable cards, it was in the, the guy said, let me see if we got any. He like digs through the back room, dusty shelves, finally finds one. According to the FCC, there are about 500,000 Americans who use cable card. They have changed the rules, and cable companies no longer need to offer it. So, bye-bye cable card.
My home run is going to be useless now, you're saying.
Exactly. Now, the question is, and the FCC said, don't worry, even if they're not required, they'll still do it for market reasons. I don't think that's the case. Cable companies have always hated cable card. Silicon Dust, makers of the HD Home Run, had promised, and I was waiting for this Prime, HD Home Run Prime, that would have 6 tuners in it. So you put a cable card in there, you could DVR up to 6 shows at the same time, put them on the network so you could watch them anywhere in the house. This is a cord cutter's dream. Actually, it wouldn't be a cord cutter. You still need a cable service. But I suspect that that's why that's been put on hold.
Well, I mean, plus you got to remember YouTube TV does this already where you could go record whatever right. you want on any channel for, and they'll stay there for months. So, like, it's, you know,
one
kind
month.
Of a novelty now.
Only a month, yeah. But still, yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think cable card, it's the end of the line for the cable card. I'm disappointed because I have 4 TiVos that will be obsoleted as soon as cable cards. I have 4 cable cards in my house. I was waiting for this HD Prime. I would get rid of all but one, and then it would be the solution, but I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe the Biden campaign doesn't understand spending on YouTube, but they know Animal Crossing. You can now get Biden-Harris yard signs for your Animal Crossing New Horizons game. There's something Trump doesn't have.
They don't know that.
That's pretty funny.
What's the demographic for Animal Crossing?
I don't think they're voters. Maybe they are. Actually, wait a minute. I take it back. I think Christina Warren lives in Animal Crossing.
I played Animal Farm like crazy the first 6 or 8 weeks. I think it's an incredibly, terribly complex game hidden under cutesy animals.
Yeah. I would play it, but I can't get my Switch away from Michael. So I just have to. He has it and plays it. I said, well, how is it? He said, oh, you wouldn't want it. You wouldn't like it. Florence Ion. That's who else plays it. Yeah. I think this is going to be interesting too, not just YouTube, but I think they're going to be, not just YouTube and Pinterest, but I think we're going to see streamed rallies in these places in Minecraft and, and maybe in Animal Crossing. Players can access the designs in-game by scanning the QR codes on the Biden-Harris website. Pick your sign. Here's one that says Joe. I like that, with a little rainbow. Team Joe. I don't know. Is that clearly Joe? Three sunglasses, red, white, and blue. He's kind of famous for his aviator glasses. That's kind
of, that doesn't scream it to me, but I guess I see subtle. The reference.
It's subtle. Yeah. And then Biden Harris.
That's funny. You know, as of late July, they had no director of cybersecurity, but they've launched this by the first week of September.
Just shows you how quickly you can get this stuff running. Pinterest says it's no longer going to allow ads on election-related content and searches. It banned political ads in 2018. I wish Facebook would do that. Let's see. Oh, here's a story. Today I learned my Fisher-Price gamepad that my kid plays with understands the Konami code. Up, down, left, right, BA. What do you get?
Contra.
What do you get? What happens?
Forgot start. Where's start?
Oh, there's no start button. But nevertheless, the controller erupted into sound. A Mario jump, a Mario mushroom power up, a Mario coin, and declared, "You win." Oh, I got to play this. Can you hear it? Let me turn it on.
Here is a new Fisher-Price video game controller thing for the kiddies.
See, if you talk Scottish.
It's got the usual things. You press buttons and it says stuff. And then it says numbers and colours and stuff.
Don't give this to your kids, Lou. Don't.
Amazingly, if you put in the Konami code, so that's up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A. You beat the game. Awesome.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
Of Contra.
Let me see. I think is it possible we've run out of stories? I feel like there was more I wanted to talk about, but I think we've run out of stories.
The one thing I want to mention from one of the stories was there was a minor news from Google Maps, but it came directly from Google Maps. And they shared the intriguing statistic that a billion kilometers per day, are traveled by Google Maps users. And wow. I did the back of the envelope math on that. And 24 years of that usage is a light year. So I'm always pleased when humans are doing things that can be measured only in light years.
Thank you for doing the math.
That's all I got.
How long before we get a parsec? Can you figure that out while
I... Parsec is like 3 point something light years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so it should be easy to
probably
figure.
80 years or so. But if we all start using Google Maps more, we will get to a parsec faster.
The chat room has a question for the panel. We'll ask that in a minute. But first, a word from LastPass. You know we're here at the LastPass studios. We love LastPass. And I tell you what, so do IT professionals and security professionals. They... surveyed 700 IT and security professionals across a range of industries from financial services to IT to retail. Almost all of them, 82%, said their business had been exposed to a risk due to poor identity and access management. That's why you use LastPass. LastPass makes sure that the right people are using the right resources at the right time from the right place. You get IT oversight. And you know what's amazing? It does something I thought was impossible. It makes you more secure and it's more convenient. What? Usually security and convenience are a trade-off, but LastPass does everything to make it easier to create long, strong passwords, fully random, store them safely, call them up automatically fill them in on web pages and on apps. LastPass has features for a LastPass Enterprise like single sign-on, which is even easier than passwords. Just click a button on your phone that says, "Yeah, that's me," and you're logged in. LastPass makes it easy and safe for employees to share logins, too. Not write them on Post-it notes or send them by a text or email. No, you can send it directly through LastPass through their secure encrypted transmission. That is what you want. Enterprise password management ensures oversight of shadow IT and enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts. Multi-factor authentication, too. Not just two-factor. Sure, two-factor. You got biometrics, either fingerprint or face scan, but you also have contextual factors like location or IP address. Those really help make sure the right people are accessing the right resources. And, of course, we know because Steve Gibson checked it out for us 10 years ago now. That's how long we've been using LastPass. We know that it uses the best AES 256-bit encryption. It uses the PBK DF2, the key derivative function, to make sure brute forcing is virtually impossible. Salted hashes to ensure complete security in the cloud. Your data is never decrypted anywhere but on device. And your password is never transmitted to LastPass. They don't have access to it. Only you have access to your data and your password. That's the way it should be done. LastPass does it all right. That's why it's the number one password manager. Let LastPass securely manage your user's identity and let your employees work more efficiently without making your business vulnerable to cyber threats. If you're in enterprise and you're not using LastPass, you got to do it. We've been using it for a long time. Makes it easy to add new employees automatically and take employees out. It makes it very easy to control who accesses what when. We have folders for different business divisions. So the business office gets their passwords all in one place. The ops guys get their passwords in one place. The studio technicians get their passwords in one place. It's so much better than any other method of managing it. LastPass.com/twit. We love it. You will too. LastPass.com/twit. Because stronger security. Can't wait. So I didn't mention the NVIDIA announcement. We talked about it a little bit before the show because you built, Lou, your new machine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you said you put a kind of a replaceable card in there.
Gap filler.
Yeah. Gap filler. We still don't know what the new RTX 30 series GPUs will cost, do we?
Well, they're saying that the 3090, which is the high end, comes out on the 24th. Will be about $1,499, and if you think about it, it's high. But if you think about it, if you compare that to some of the previous cards, like the 2080 Ti, it's like in the same ballpark. In fact, that's cheaper than the 2080 Ti. It's got more memory and it's faster, and so it almost sunsets those cards, which is why you're seeing buyout prices in places like Best Buy and Newegg and all those places, because they know that these other cards are just going to completely eclipse the rest of them.
Why is NVIDIA being so aggressive about this?
Well, they had the technology. They've had it for a while.
Ray tracing and things like that, right?
They've had it for a while, and they just know that, with a lot more remote workers and the need for, obviously, Bitcoin, these other things becoming more and more prevalent, they didn't think that it would be a bad time to release these things. And they knew that, people were going to start buying more machines because of, the stretch out of the pandemic and so on. And so they just decided to do it. This is what it seems like. But I'm surprised at the pricing, because I've been doing a lot of research on graphics cards, and they can get up there. Like, I think Newegg's selling a 2080 Ti a couple weeks ago for like $1,800.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I mean,
14 is a heck of a deal. Yeah. And are they worried about AMD's big Navi? Is that maybe part of the reason to get the jump on that, do you think?
Oh, yeah, obviously. I mean, they're always fighting.
Should they be
AMD.
Worried? It feels like NVIDIA with ray tracing lapped Radeon, right?
Right. That's true. And there's a lot more adoption of ray tracing. So I think that's one of the key players too. And so now when you put out the card that can support it, and it'll just make everything more smooth and more realistic. I think that's where AMD's worrying.
Yeah.
Not that consoles matter as much anymore, but ray tracing will be in each new console.
Right. I know. I'm excited.
Although I think the real thing to be excited about, especially with NVIDIA, they've had some challenges, but is streaming. I mean, Microsoft too, with what's coming up with xCloud and Game Pass, but NVIDIA's I got rid of my graphics card and got rid of my PC. I'm just down to an old Mac Mini now because I stream everything using GeForce Now.
Right. Yeah, that is pretty exciting. Although, if you're an Apple user, you might be a little nervous about iOS's policy towards Epic with Fortnite because obviously xCloud. Somebody said xCloud is running on iOS. I think a beta was, but it's not running. It's not going to come.
Yeah, there's test flight, I think.
Test flight, but I don't. Do you know anything about that, Lou? Have you been following xCloud?
No, no. I mean, Microsoft other than beta streaming. Testing it, but yeah. I've heard yeah. anything. No.
So it pretty much looks like Apple is digging in on that and is not going to offer xCloud or Stadia or Epic's future store or any of that stuff on iOS. That's going to be an interesting battle. And then Apple,
it will be.
Yeah, then Apple's going to have its own GPU. They're going to do that in the Apple Silicon. I can't imagine it competing against Big Navi or the RTX 30.
I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to say that Apple's mistake here, because then you can remember Android's creeping up on them, which means that there's going to be some company that puts out some devices that allows you to do all of these that's inexpensive, and that's going to allow you to do xCloud and the Google Cloud and all that and Stadia. And they're just going to eclipse the Apple gaming infrastructure. And I think that's why they think that's a big mistake. I mean, it should just be that they strike a deal here where they get a little bit of a cut from these services and then allow them rather than just completely preventing them from being there. I kind of think it's a mistake, but we'll have to see.
I totally agree. I think this is I mean, just like we were talking about OTT with video, the same applies for OTT with gaming. And your iPhone and definitely your Android device can stream high quality games.
Yeah.
So Lou is exactly right.
So Lou, you just built a monster gaming machine.
I didn't build it for gaming. To be clear, I built it because I'm doing a lot more development at home.
You need a 64 core Ryzen. To compile your code?
Well, some code bases are big.
What are you building, Windows 11?
Never seen the Office code base. I mean.
how many lines of code? How fast can you compile? You're not building all of Office.
It depends. I mean, it depends on what app you're talking about. But I mean, some, like my work machine that only has 8 cores at the time would take, you know, minutes, maybe sometimes 30 minutes. To run a complete build. Now they have, Microsoft does what they call cloud build,
right,
where they push just your changes up to the cloud and then they build it for you, and they build it across 100 machines, so it takes seconds. But I mean, for local devices, local apps that have a million lines of code, I mean, it'll take a while. It'll take a lot to compile.
Do you guys, you must have a custom build tool. You don't use Maven or Jenkins or anything.
It depends. I mean, a lot of older code, there's custom stuff, but a lot of it's moving to MS Build and Cloud Build. And
it's really interesting. You're building the diffs. You're building
they push your changes up, which is not very much, and then they just run the build with your diffs. Yep.
Love that. That's kind of cool.
It's more secure, too.
I'm always fascinated by the tooling used by Microsoft, Google, and Facebook because they're operating at a scale that is unimaginable to anybody even 10 years ago. I mean, just it's unimaginable. And it's always fascinating to see what these cats are doing. It's really great to have you on the show, Lou. Keep working. Keep up the great work on Twilight. I don't know how you have time. How many kids do you have now?
I have 4 kids, 1 on the way. It will be in the end of November.
I don't know how you have time to do that. Do woodworking. Fly you said earlier today you flew your Microsoft Flight Simulator and you didn't even know we had an airport. You landed at Petaluma Airport. You got my hopes up. I thought you were coming down, but no, it was just in the flight sim. Have you done what they're doing? Have you flown in Alora? Because they're actually putting real-time weather data in the Microsoft.
Yeah, it's
Flight
pretty
sim.
Amazing.
Did
it's
you fly in Alora?
I did not, but I have flown around, in that area and down in the area where they're having a lot of the storms, and it's pretty amazing. That's especially so when you cool. have the monitors behind me, and you know, sooner or later VR will be even more amazing. But
nice, that's awesome. Follow Lou on the Twiet. He's Lou MM on the Twitter. Anything you want to plug? We just love having you on, Twyatt. You're so good.
Yeah, come check out Twyatt. I mean, we you know, you talk about a little bit about Barracuda, who is the sponsor, but I mean, we had the CTO on recently, and he brought us through a lot of the attacks and malware that's happening today. Some really interesting Salesforce is recently on.
Nice.
So, I mean, just come and check it out. I mean, it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun on there. We do a lot of latest trends. And you can find some really interesting stuff either if you're not interested in enterprise stuff. So
at come check Lou it out. MM. Thank you, Lou. This Week in Enterprise Tech. Make sure you subscribe. It's great to see you, Dan Patterson from CNET and CBS News. He's covered. So you've been, I love the beats that you choose. You were covering Occupy Wall Street, and then you were doing the election. Are you going to be doing the election beat this year?
Oh, yeah, we have been for a while. I mean, this campaign has felt, and it's been a long campaign. I've been very fortunate.
4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I cover the intersection of politics and technology. And as you know, I try really hard not to bring partisan stuff here to TWiT, and we do spend a lot of time talking tech, but this, it really has been 4 years, and we have seen these kind of horrifying emergence of groups like QAnon and some of the more violent groups that are seem to be radicalized. So I spend a lot of time covering disinformation and the different routes it takes to the president.
How interesting.
So, I mean, I'm really looking forward to, like, only thinking about gaming and tech after the election. Although the election will not be one day.
No.
And certainly be prepared for. Look, I just interviewed Brian Krebs.
Love Brian Krebs. Love him.
Mail-in voting is safe. Do not buy any of this misinformation and disinformation about mail-in voting. It is safe and secure. It is resilient because it generates a paper trail. It might take a little time to count this, but you can be rest assured if you vote by mail, your vote will be secure.
Some have said that you should, and I think I'm going to do this, get an absentee ballot, though, save it on an election day, drop it, bring it to a polling place and drop it in a polling box. Is that a safer way to do it?
I don't know that I shouldn't prescribe on safety for election. I know
there's
what
a lot of unknowns. I saw one security expert say you should crawl on broken glass if you have to vote in person, because it's the only way to guarantee your vote, your ballot will get into the
mix. I misspoke. I interviewed Chris Krebs, who is the head of DHS cyber.
Oh, okay. Not Brian Krebs.
His prescription. He is the top cybersecurity official in the country. And he says that because mail-in voting generates a paper trail, it is safe and resilient. So that is, I'm not prescribing anything. I'm just using.
Everybody agrees. The paper trail is critical to election security.
That's what counts. Yeah. So, but thanks. It's been great to be here, Lee.
Really fantastic. Catch Dan, of course, on CBS News and whenever we can get him on our channel. And I'm so glad to see you again, Rob Reed. Please give Morgan my love. Rob is brilliant novelist. You've got to read his first two novels. The first is about aliens coming to Earth with a huge copyright bill. Because apparently they love Earth music.
They love our pop music. We make the best music in the universe, and we don't know it. But in the world of Year Zero, which is that book, this vast alien civilization knows how magnificent our music is, and they accidentally commit the biggest copyright infringement since the Big Bang, thereby basically bankrupting the entire universe. So all the wealth in the universe is owed to our pop stars and their lawyers, and only one person knows about this, a low-level media lawyer in New York, and he catches on to a nasty alien plot. So no spoilers there. That all happens in the first four pages.
And if you want to read another great book, After On is fantastic. Also kind of a sci-fi novel about a social network that becomes intelligent.
Self-aware.
Self-aware. Yes. Ay, 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 yay. Really a pleasure to have you on, Rob. And After On, the podcast will come back soon, I hope, after-on.com. Make sure you watch his TED Talk. That's fascinating. And we'll get you back real soon. Thank you, Rob.
It's good fantastic.
To have you. Good to have you on here. I had no idea that you were a Fulbright scholar in Cairo.
I was.
That's wild.
Yeah, my first year out of college, I went there to study Arabic and research the secular opposition. And sort of the political descendants of the people that I spent a lot of time with that year are the ones who were really behind Egypt's Arab Spring movement in 2011.
Right.
They did not end up, they carried the day in that they got rid of Mubarak, but they did not carry the day in that they did not ultimately take the reins of the government, which is tragic on a lot of levels.
Yes.
But that was a really cool year that I spent there, and I still speak better Arabic than most folks in Marin County.
Do you get much occasion to use it?
Occasionally I do.
And it's tough always, language. That's a hard language.
It's a tough language. Yeah. And for some reason, it's really stuck in my brain pretty nicely.
That's
and
so
when
cool.
I do get an opportunity to dust it off, everybody is always completely shocked, which is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be. We've got to go to an Arab restaurant sometime, and you could just show off. It'd be fun.
I would love that in the after times. In the after times,
exactly.
Yeah.
We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, about 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. If you can watch us do it live. There's always interesting conversations before and after the show. Just go to twit.tv/live. There's live audio and video streams there. If you're watching live, there's a chat room. You can talk with others who are watching live, and it's really great. It's there 24/7, irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of this show and everything we do are available in a variety of places. The podcast, that's what it means, right? It's a podcast. The podcast can be downloaded from our website, twit.tv. You can add, we're actually on YouTube. There's a whole YouTube channel. If you go to youtube.com/twit, you can see all the different show channels. We are also available in your favorite podcast application. That's probably the best thing to do. Subscribe, and you will get it automatically the minute the show's available. And we appreciate it if you do subscribe. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Another Twit is in the can.